Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Historically, the first Super Bowl prop bet appears to be when William the Refrigerator Perry, whether or not he'd score a touchdown during the 1986 Super Bowl. Winners were paid 40-1. This year, there are hundreds of different prop bets, many hundreds, including who's going to score first, how many field goals, who has the most passing yards, will there be a two-point conversions, etc. Former co-host of this program, Michael Shackelford, has done well betting on Super Bowl props and returns this year to discuss some of his favorites, among other topics as well. Michael Shackelford, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you. On last week's show, we were talking about a poker tournament at the Borgata in Atlantic City that was stopped due to a large number of counterfeit chips being introduced. I enumerated some of the problems of introducing chips surreptitiously, and Munchkin called me naive. I also said the guy or guys who did it would likely be caught quickly. Turns out that the guy who did it panicked and did something really stupid. He flushed 160 high-denomination chips down the toilet of a casino hotel room at Harrah's, which is not so far away. Apparently, he found out poker chips don't biodecompose as quickly as he thought. And the whole toilet system in the hotel backed up, overflowed, and people noticed that. Most of the chips were still in the toilet area of one particular hotel room, registered to a guy who was indeed in the tournament and was a chip leader on the first day, and the police had their guy. So far, no word on what's going to happen to the prize money and the 27 players still in. Munchkin, what do you make of this?
I just found it sort of funny, and you know, it just shows you most criminals are morons. I mean, you know, he should be up for the Darwin Award of gambling scams, I guess.
Yeah, if you're going to get rid of him, I mean, there's an ocean a couple yards away.
Right.
I'm not familiar with Atlantic City, but there got to be piers, and you can get rid of something. But I don't know. Oh well. Okay, there was a 47-month prison term handed down for a Chinese lady, Irene Lee, who defrauded a bunch of strip casinos. Among other things, she'd have Chinese citizens get lines of credit at the casino, basically floating the same money back and forth between the accounts. All of these players would play baccarat at the same table as Lee or her husband, where one side bet banker and one side player. When they played their money through once, they cashed out, left the markers unpaid, and then left the country, leaving the casino stuck for some $2.2 million. A lot of things struck me about this. One is that the defendant used a public defender as her attorney. I guess she didn't think Bob Nersessian or the other attorneys could have gotten her a better deal. I was also struck by the four-year prison term for $2.2 million, which I'm thinking is a relatively small term as casino ripoffs go. Any comments?
Yeah, well, again, it just shows you, you know, criminals are morons. I'm actually surprised there isn't more of this. I mean, if you can get a big line of credit and fly in from China and take a shot, and if you lose, I mean, just go back to China, and how are they going to get you? Yeah, as I say, I'm just surprised we haven't heard of this happening more often.
If I could interject something, yes. I think Nersessian can afford to be picky with his clients, and he doesn't like to take criminals. He likes to take clients who have a cause that he believes in. And I don't think that, you know, he would be proud to represent a criminal in this case.
Yeah, I don't know that he would accept that case either. But again, to my point of criminals being morons, you know, if you can rip off $2.2 million, you can afford a good lawyer who I bet would have gotten her less than 4 years.
Yeah, 3.5 at most. Okay. Now, the National Finals Rodeo, NFR, has been a fixture in early December in Vegas for more than 25 years. The NFR received a better offer from Orlando, Florida, and decided to bolt following the 2014 event. The Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority decided to up their annual offer by more than $5 million, and the Cowboys agreed to stay for at least another 10 years for $16.5 million a year. I have mixed feelings about this. Without the NFR, the first few weeks in December would be pretty quiet here in Vegas. All across the country, people are doing Christmassy stuff, shopping, office parties, etc. And those things cut down on their Vegas visit, and collectively, those add up. Now, I enjoy country western music, so the fact that I get to hear Alan Jackson and Reba McEntire sing Christmas carols rather than the same song by more mainstream singers doesn't bother me at all. So that part, the NFR was good. On the other hand, if the NFR weren't here, I salivate over what kind of offers a casino would come up with in order to entice gamblers into their otherwise dead casinos. Historically, December has had better than average offers, at least for video poker players. And without the NFR, probably those offers would be even better. Munchkin, you don't live in Vegas now, but you probably will be by December 2015, which is when the first time this takes effect. Do you have any thoughts one way or the other about the rodeo staying?
No, it doesn't really affect me one way or another. Although following your logic, which I think is correct, why not take that opportunity to hit a casino venue in a place that is really slow? You know, seems like they might offer you some good deals to come.
Sounds like a plan.
I mean, I don't know how your future wife would feel about, you know, vacationing in Biloxi or something, but for Christmas. But
it wouldn't be Christmas. Christmas itself has the opportunities here, but I'm pretty sure Bonnie would. She likes it okay if I take her with her, if I take her with me. So, all right. Now, there was a player who wished to know how strategies for Jacks are better. How to get new strategies for Jacks are better as the progressive rises. So, Michael, why don't you first tell us how the player would do this using the wizardofodds.com site?
If you go to my video poker page, you click on the strategy calculator, and then you put in the game you're playing, whatever the pay table is, and bingo, it gives you a strategy for that game. For example, I just put in Jacks are better, 9-6, but with a 900 royal, and it produced about a 30-step strategy, and if you want something more advanced than that, you can click more on certain borderline hands, and it'll tell you exactly, you know, what the exceptions are.
You mean a 9,000 royal?
Well, I meant 900 per coin, so that would come to 4,500 instead of 4,000.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Is there any kind of strategy that is out there? I mean, because the longer you play, the more it goes up, and it may change again, right? I mean, obviously you would be drawing to hit more chances of hitting a royal, but you know, or do you need to just go look at certain benchmarks and know, okay, when it gets up to this amount, I'm going to change to this, and when it gets up to that amount, I'll change again?
Well, Bob's truly the expert on that, but you would see as you put in bigger royals that it pushes up the priority of the suited hands. You know, for example, a 3 to a royal or 4 to a flush, or say Jack 10 suited versus Jack King off suit. But you know, the program just, you know, does everything. So I don't know what it does, but it figures it out somehow.
When I was playing, I don't play progressives much. And so I have, for the progressives that I there is casino where I play 8-5 bonus progressive, and I have a, I already have the 4,000 Royal memorized, and I have sheets for 4,500, 5,000, 5,500, 6,000, 6,500, and 7,000 handy when I go to those casinos. So I usually know about what it is before I go in, or I wouldn't be there. So so I practice on that one. So the best book on progressives is one by Frank Nealon, who was the first co-host of this radio show. And he's far more of an expert than I am. But one of the things Michael's site has is he has a beginner strategy and an advanced strategy. Well, that's not quite true. He has a beginner strategy and a list of exceptions. And so on the list of exceptions, so you can make your strategy as good as you want. Now on videopoker.com, Video Poker for Winners, which is the software that I have, we will create a strategy and there will also be a list of exceptions. Probably no surprise, I like the format of mine better than his. He probably likes the format of his better than mine. It's, you can get the information. I want it more shorthand than what he has, and I want the exceptions listed. So I basically have to create it myself. So I want to know when, like Jack 10 is suited is better than King Jack, unless there's a flush penalty or an 8 or a 9 would be a basic strategy condition. An 8-5 bonus, as it goes up, those rules change. So I want to list those as a specific rule rather than have a list of 300 hands, which would be exceptions.
So, I get you. I just want to say for our listeners, this question was submitted to us. So people who, send us your questions at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or submit them on the Facebook page, Facebook Gambling with an Edge.
Yes. And it's also you want to practice it. If you're going to be and Jacks Are Better is a simple strategy. If you start, there's several more complex games, his software will handle that as well. It's a lot longer than the 30 lines as the game gets more complex. All right, let's get to the Super Bowl props. Apparently, you found the number of selections not as lucrative this year, Mike. Why is that?
Two main reasons. Number one, I feel there's more advantage gamblers out there hunting for the good props, so there's more competition. And number two, the small spread makes a lot of props just no good. For example, first team to score a touchdown, first team to score at all, last team to score, first team to punt. Because it's such a close game, you pretty much see all of these at like minus 110, minus 120, and there's no advantage either way.
All right. Let's say,
what about the I know the safety was always a big one for you. What are the price on the safeties this year?
Yeah, I was going to talk about that. That one is, I perceive, as one of the best props year after year. My opinion is the fair price on that to lay on no safety is 15-20, and the best I've seen it so far is minus 750 at Harrah's. But then again, there has been a safety in three of the last Super Bowls, including the last two. So I'm still feeling the pain from the last 2 years. So I'm not going to bet it as big as I have in previous years. And there's a huge discussion on my forum if somehow Super Bowls are more likely to produce a safety or somehow this game in particular is. I just know that my calculator says that the fair line is minus 1520, and maybe that's not exactly right, but I certainly feel that it's a good bet at minus 750 or minus 800.
Yes, I've piggybacked on some of Michael's bets, and I'm down about 18,000 over the past four Super Bowls on the no safety. We've done well on the others.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And I'm sinking with that ship with you.
Good.
Good.
Oh, good. That makes me feel a lot better.
Well, now, nice to have company on the sinking ship.
So let's say, and I don't know that this is true, Let's say on the no safety bet on was you can get it at -600 on Bovada.com, which is an offshore site.
Yes.
Americans aren't allowed to bet on the internet except in three states and a limited number of games.
Mm-hmm.
How would an American listener get a bet down on Bovada.com should they want to?
First, just go through the steps of opening an account. It's really easy. Then I would recommend calling their support to say, I'm in the U.S. and I wish to make a deposit. How would you recommend I do it? And I did this recently on their new site, slots.com, and they had me send a Western Union to some particular name in the Philippines. So I did, and within about, and then I told them I just sent it, and within about an hour, the full $500 was in my account, plus a 100% bonus. So they pick up all the fees for that. They make it very easy and simple. Other than the fact that you do have to go to Western Union and send the money that way, at least that is how they recommended I do it with a $500 deposit.
And how do you cash out?
The way you cash out is you just go through their website and indicate you want to cash out, and they will send you a check by courier, FedEx or UPS.
Oh. I thought maybe you could get it Western Union and they'll pay you in 20s.
No, making the withdrawals is a lot easier than making the deposits.
All right. Now, this year, Peyton Manning had arguably the best year ever as a quarterback. He's well-loved by the fans, does great commercials, but he's only won one Super Bowl. Even his brother Eli, who's widely considered not nearly the quarterback Peyton is, has two rings. So the public has bet on the Broncos into being a favorite, while most of the sharps are on the Seahawks. It's widely assumed that a fair line would be Seahawks favored by a point or so, rather than the Broncos favored by almost three. Your system, I think, uses the line and over and under total as seed numbers. Does having a false line have the potential of changing what the real value of the prop bets should be?
Absolutely it would. However, I not so much of a believer in these false lines. I'm a strong believer that the market is pretty efficient when it comes to the point spread and the total. I'm not saying it's exactly right, but I absolutely do not handicap. I just trust whatever the market is. Yes, there are a lot of handicappers I respect, but sometimes they disagree with each other and then I get confused. So I just go with the market, and I figure that's just as likely to help me as to hurt me.
I thought it was interesting. I saw Nate Silver on Nate Silver wrote The Signal and the Noise. And
I'd love to get him on the
538
show.
Blog, picked the presidential election last time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting that he had the game as pick'em, and thought that there would be a reasonable chance that the game would be decided basically on some call that may end up controversial. So I just thought that was interesting.
That would probably be a safe bet. Okay, now this is going to be played outdoors in New Jersey in early February. The forecast changes every day, but cold and rainy and possibly windy is reasonably likely. Those have the potential to lower the scoring of the game, increasing fumbles, among other things. How are the numbers that you're looking for on the prop bets different for such a miserable weather game than they would be if the game were played indoors at, say, the New Orleans Superdome?
Well, the over-under on the game is 48, and I assume that the people betting that take into consideration the weather, and so the weather is already factored into that total. So I assume that 48 is correct, and my calculator does all the rest. And furthermore, I believe that the weather is overstated in terms of its effect on football. I think that the only important thing is wind. And I don't know if it's going to be windy that day or not.
Boy, I would think snow would really affect the...
Oh, absolutely. You know, if there were certainly like a foot of snow on the field, you wouldn't see a lot of field goals. As far as I know, it'll probably be clear and cold. But, you know, I haven't been looking at it.
It changes every day.
Yeah.
Now, The rules keep changing in the National Football League to favor the offense, probably because that makes for more interesting television. Now, your database of games, on which you devise numbers for these, has been over more than a decade, but a lot of that is with a different set of rules. Does this decrease its effectiveness?
It does, and we've talked about this on a previous show, but I look at every single NFL game going back to the year 2000, and they're all equally weighted. And back in 2000, there were only about 2.9 field goals per game, and now it's more like 3.2, 3.3. And a lot of the props that I perceive are good props have to do with a low number of field goals. And this, you know, increase in field goals in recent years has caused me to lose a lot of bets. So anytime my program says to bet, say, under 3.5 field goals or the first score to be a touchdown, I take that with a grain of salt because I know it's mixing in a lot of old data. So I have to basically take what my program tells me to do, but then just make mental adjustments to it. And, you know, and regarding, you know, changes in the rules, you know, for example, they're calling a lot more penalties for unnecessary roughness and things like that. You know, that drives up the total. So we're seeing a lot of games, you know, this past season with over-underlines in the high 40s. But that over-underline gets factored into all my props.
Now, other than the no safety, which you gave a lukewarm recommendation for, are there any other bets still out there tonight, January 30th, that you think offer positive EV for prop bettors?
Absolutely, and I'm going to list my favorite ones in order. Now, the first one, I kind of touched on this issue already, but mathematically speaking, my program shows that the best prop out there is Prater, the kicker for Seattle, will have under 7.5 kicking points. He's a great kicker. There have been more field goals in recent history, so I'm going to not bet this one as big as my program is telling me to do, but it says that this one is fair at minus 120, and it's available out there at plus 110. I show that to have an advantage of 14.5%. Nevertheless, I'm not betting that aggressively. I'm just betting that one small. My favorite prop that I am enthusiastic about is under 9 punts. I put that fair at minus 137. I just got that yesterday at minus 110 at Cantor. I've seen it all over the place at minus 115. I show that the advantage at minus 110 is 10.4%. And the reason I like it is it's projected to be a high-scoring game with 48 points. And the more points that are scored, the fewer punts that you see. Along with that, some places like the Wynn have punts under 9.5. I put that fair at minus 190. The Wynn has that at minus 150 for an advantage of 9.2%. Denver, another one I like is Denver to score a touchdown in the first quarter. This is a rare time when I'm betting on something to happen. Normally, I'm always betting on things not to happen. Nevertheless, I show that fair at plus 105. I've seen that at plus 120 at Harrah's. We already talked about the no safety. I like Seattle to score. I like the first score by Seattle to be a touchdown. I put that fair at minus 163. I've seen that at minus 140 at the Cantor Sportsbooks. No overtime. I put that fair at minus 1413. I've seen that as good as minus 800 at Harrah's. Another bridge jumper, no two-point conversion. I put that fair at minus 628. I've seen that at minus 475 at the Wynn. Yet another bridge jumper, no 3-point margin of victory. I put that fair at minus 538, and I've seen that at minus 425 at the Wynn. And there's some other smaller ones, but it's all the usual bridge jumpers. And last year I was really big on the under punts as well. So it's kind of funny. Is after all this work, I seem to bet the same ones over and over, year after year.
That's not really surprising. I mean, because it you know, if they're pricing something wrong, it wouldn't be surprising they would continue to price it wrong.
Right, and you know, when the squares always bet the same way, they're always betting overs and on things to happen, and the books just want to balance their action, so it creates value the other way. And with these bridge jumper bets, the big four, the no safety, no overtime, no 2-point conversion, and no 3-point margin of victory. I would wait to the last minute to bet those when all the squares come into town for the game, bet the yes, and it creates value the other way.
Now, as you were saying, a lot of square money comes in Saturday, Sunday. So are those? So do you expect more opportunities on Sunday than you right now? You say there's not a lot of opportunities. Do you think there'll be more on Sunday?
Yes, late Saturday and Sunday are a great time to bet for a sharp bettor. And like I just said, it's because all the recreational bettors are betting on things to happen, and so the sports books are shading their lines to try to get money on the other way. And a little off topic, I've been for a long time, I've considered Super Bowl props to be one of these things that is just too good to talk about. But this year, I've decided to be more open with it. That's why I'm talking about it right now. And I'm going to release on my website tomorrow a calculator where you can put in any spread or total that you want, and it will tell you the fair line for a whole host of props, about 50 of them. And this would be a great guide to take to the casino and compare my lines to what the casinos are offering. And if you see that you're getting a better line from the casino than what's fair, that's what it's there for, and I think you should bet it.
In both Washington and Colorado, you can legally purchase and consume marijuana.
Good for them.
You think that's a coincidence that those two teams got it?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, as Munchin indicated, these are the two teams that are in the Super Bowl. So some people are calling it the Stoner Bowl or maybe the Weed Bowl. There's been on the news that there's at least one prop as to whether anyone from the Crack Fox sports team, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Pam Oliver, Aaron Andrews, will mention marijuana on the air. Michael, how would a player who wasn't stoned handicap this?
Well, you know, I would listen to these announcers' previous games that they've broadcast and look at the kind of things that they like to talk about. And, you know, you would have to just go on instinct. Personally, I'm not very familiar with these announcements, so have no idea. So that's one I'm going to leave alone.
I understand that these bets are available, you know, at offshore books, but mm-hmm. Have you seen bets on this in Vegas at all?
No, I think gaming would frown on betting on something silly like that. In fact, the El Cortez once booked bets on where the Skylab would fall, and I think gaming was not very happy with them over that. And since then, you never see... The silliest thing I've seen bets on is the number of Scrabble points of the player to score the first touchdown.
Is that out there this year?
I haven't checked yet, so I don't know.
Now, let's call that a weird bet. Are there any weird bets that are out there that you have checked or you think are interesting?
No, there's, you know, Bodog always has a lot of silly ones, but I have no opinion about any of them.
All right.
But a good advantage play would be to book these bets against your friends. If, say, you're having a Super Bowl party, just, you know, note the lines on a, you know, some fun ones, like what color gloves will Renee Fleming be wearing when she sings the national anthem, and just book whatever the Bodog lines are.
Okay.
That's actually a good idea.
All right. So we're going to... Unless you got something specific, Munchin, we're going to leave the the prop bet and go on to something else.
I was just going to say I saw the article today that Floyd Money Mayweather has bet $13 million on Denver. So they mentioned that he spread it around I don't know, four books in Vegas and seven online, or seven in Vegas and four online, something like that. But man is not afraid to take a position.
Yeah, I assume that if you're going to put that kind of action down, that you're not, you get slightly better odds. You don't have to lay the full -110. Is that, would that be right?
I was surprised it said that most of his action went down at Denver -2, and he also, some of it was on Denver -0.5 for the first half. So Denver -2 didn't sound like that great a line.
Yeah, the going line right now is 1.5.
It was 2.5 a couple days ago, and so now it's down to 1.5. The sharps think Seattle should be favored. So -2 was probably the appropriate line when he did it. But it's, even if you bet that line, it's still, you have to lay 11 to get 10. Would you guess he laid the full -110 on that? Or would you, well, if you get a big bet, do you get -105 or -103? Michael?
I think it depends on what the hot side is. When you're betting that much, you're certainly in a position to negotiate. So I think it would depend on what side the books wanted. But if they were indifferent, I'm sure that he might be able to argue a better line like -105.
It would seem that even in the face of that size bet, the line is still dropping, and which kind of, so $13 million, I guess, is still chump change for the sports books. That's interesting. All right, let's talk about Ultimate Texas Hold'em. Now, this is a table game with numerous betting rounds. Sometimes the bets are 2 times, 3 times, or 4 times the original ante. The strategy is complex. The house edge is fairly low without collusion. Now, Michael says he's about to publish a new strategy on this game on his website, talking in depth over the radio about a complex strategy. Isn't going to happen, but we do have some questions about this. Basically, a good strategy balances accuracy with complexity. In many games, a completely accurate strategy is impossible for humans. Does your new strategy move closer to accuracy, or does it move closer to simplicity compared to a former strategy you used?
It comes closer to simplicity.
So what?
And you actually, you've already posted it, right?
It's, yeah, I posted up. It 2 days ago.
Yeah, and you give up. It's what, 3/10 worse than normal than the better basic strategy?
Yes, the optimal strategy has a house advantage of 2.18% and -2.43%, which is a difference of 0.25%. But if you look at the element of risk, which is the ratio of what you can expect to lose to everything you bet, including the blind and all the raises, it's only 0.05% less. So I feel that it comes quite close to optimal strategy, but is much more simple than anything else out there. There were already two outstanding yet complicated strategies on the game, one by James Grosjean, which you can buy at LasVegasAdvisor.com, and there's also a very good one at DiscountGambling.net, but it's very cryptic and difficult to understand. So I felt that the world was crying out for a simple strategy to Ultimate Texas Hold'em, and so I created one.
I have to say that this game, in my experience, I have never seen a game that the general public plays so horribly. I mean, so if they were to look at your strategy or buy the strategy card that you mentioned that James Grosjean has through Las Vegas Advisor, I mean, most of the civilian population out there is playing at like -12 or 15% on this game. I mean, they just play horribly.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I would be surprised if one player in 100 knew anything about proper strategy to the game, and it's not intuitive at all. I just see players just playing awfully.
Yeah.
Are the comps on this game, including mailers and stuff, sufficient to even playing the basic strategy that you may even have an edge because the casino's assuming you're playing at a 6% detriment? Do you have any idea?
Well, that's a very good question, and this is a question that gets kicked around in advantage player circles a lot. I used to play in a lot of tournaments, and of course, to play in these tournaments, you have to, you know, show them a lot of free play. And one game that I like to play at certain places is Ultimate Texas Hold'em, because I think that they assume a high theoretical loss for the game. So it's a good way to have them perceive you're a lousy player at not much actual cost. However, not everyone necessarily rates it the same way. And even in the same casino, one floorman may rate it differently than another. For example, what do you count as the average bet? Is it just the ante bet? Is it the ante and the blind bet? Or is it the ante, blind, and raise? And what do you do about the trips bet? So, and when I worked at the Venetian, you know, I asked a lot of floormen, what is our policy for when you put in the average bet, you know, for a game like this where there's a lot of raising? And I never got a clear answer to the question. It seemed like everyone had a different understanding of it. And with a lot of players that play for comps, lots of times, you know, they would know who rates games well, and just follow around these floormen and only play under their watch.
Interesting. Now, simplifying a complex strategy is an art. Are there general rules of thumb that you use when you simplify strategies that might apply to other games? Or is every case different?
My philosophy is I like the strategy to be as powerful as possible, yet something that you could easily put on one sheet of paper. So I'm always tinkering around with, what if I change this rule to that rule? What if I, you know, make the, you know, raising point here instead of there? And, you know, and through trial and error, I come up with the most powerful strategy I can that is short. I feel that a lot of my competitors in the gambling writing world are very good at creating complicated yet near optimal strategies. So I believe that creates some shelf space for somebody, for the more recreational gamblers, to write about something that is more simple and easy to memorize.
Although I have to say that even though you have simplified it, it isn't that simple. I mean, it's still rather complicated.
Right. And
compared to like three-card poker, you know.
Yes, and I'm sure that if I showed this strategy to most players, they would look at it for 2 seconds and say, you know, that's too complicated for me. But for people like us, you know, it probably would look very simple. So, you know, I can only make things so simple and still maintain my integrity. You know, I don't want to dumb things down too much.
You know, it's interesting, the natural evolution of players. And, you know, for example, now even bad blackjack players have kind of learned that you hit 12 against a 2 or a 3, or, you know, they've heard you're supposed to hit soft 18 against a 9 or a 10, but maybe they don't do it. But the average blackjack player over the last 30 years has really gotten a lot better. And I've really kind of been watching the civilians play this game, wondering, you know, there are a few simple rules, like if you have an ace, you're supposed to raise 4 times, right? Mm-hmm. Any ace, you're supposed to raise 4 times.
That's true.
But the civilians just have not gotten that at all yet. I mean, that's a pretty simple rule. You would think that they would be able to sort of glom onto, but boy, not yet.
Yeah, I think that proper strategy for this game just has not trickled down. It hasn't appeared in any books yet, and I think a lot of the dealers don't know
CAA,
it.
CAA, but
yes,
nobody has that book
unless they have $3,000. So
here's $2,000 at Amazon as of last weekend. By the way,
no, that was the old version. That was beyond counting. That was the first edition of the book.
Yeah, but the strategy is right there on my website, and you know, I invite the whole world to check it out.
Very good.
And yeah, but speaking of players getting better, when I talk to people in the business, they always comment about this is you know, we have to have 6-5 blackjack now because players are getting better. You know, I'm not sure if that's an excuse, but it's something they're always saying.
Yeah.
Well, it is an excuse, is it, whether or not the excuse is valid. All right. Now, actually, that was interesting. Before we have a little bit of time, could you give us an example of one rule that would be a lot simpler on this strategy than it would be on, say, gross gene strategy?
Yes. I can get through my whole strategy pretty quickly. I'm not going to talk about when to make the large raise because that has been on my site for years, and I feel it's already common knowledge. I'm not going to repeat that. But the medium raise, when do you make the 2x raise after the flop? There's three situations where you should do that. Number one, if you've got two pair or better. Number two, if you have a hidden pair, except pocket deuces, and by hidden pair, say you have a king and there's a king on the board. And number three, you have four to a flush, including a hidden 10 or better, meaning, for example, a queen, and that queen is part of the four to a flush. When do you make the small raise? After the river. Only two situations. One, again, if you have a hidden pair or better. Love those hidden pairs. And number two.
When you say hidden pair, you mean you've paired the board.
Yes, you've paired the board. I call that a hidden pair. But I know there's other terms for it. Number two, if less than 21 dealer outs beat you. And what do I mean by a dealer out? If there's less than 21 cards that the dealer may have in his hole cards that'll beat you. For example, if there's five different ranks on the board, there's 15 ranks, I mean cards already that can beat you. Three suits for each one of those five, unless you already have one of them, but that would give you a pocket pair. And then plus there might be other cards. For example, you might have a king high, and if there's no ace on the board, then the dealer might have four aces that'll beat you. So, you know, this might come a little bit slow at first, counting all these different outs, and is it less than 21? But I have a demo you can play on my site, and, you know, once you play it for a while, you'll get the hang of it, I think, pretty quickly. As you keep seeing the same situations over and over, and it comes pretty natural to count down the outs pretty quickly.
Does the demo correct you if you make mistakes?
Absolutely it does. And sometimes you'll follow my strategy and it'll correct you when you make a mistake. And because this is a simple strategy, it's not always right. Yes, I pride myself that on most of the demo games on my site, when you make an error, it corrects you.
Based on?
Optimal strategy.
Perfect. Very good. All right. Now, other than Super Bowl props and Texas Hold'em, what else has been happening on Wizard of Oz site since the last time you were here?
Well, thanks for asking. The last time I was here was on November 14th when I was talking about half-point parlay cards. So since then, other than the ultimate Texas Hold'em strategy, I wrote another page where I played a particular slot machine. In this game, it's called Hot Roll, which I played at the Golden Nugget. I played it for about 20 minutes and recorded it all, went home, and through this tape that I recorded, or recording, I put together the order of the reel strips made an estimate of how it was weighted and did all the math and basically wrote out on my website how I felt this game was programmed. You know, is it an advantage play? Absolutely not. But I'm trying to show slot machine players how these things actually work, to demystify them, and hopefully they might see, you know, that there's nothing magic about them and you know, what a high house advantage they carry, and maybe they might switch to another game. Another thing that, my assistant JB has been working on for months is a very, very, very close to optimal strategy for PyGow poker. Where I'm big on simple strategies, he's big on very long yet optimal or near optimal strategies.
Is this the dice game or the card game?
The card game. So you put in whether or not you're banking or a balanced banking strategy, and it'll tell you, you know, in great detail what the strategy should be.
Doesn't this depend on the house rules?
Yes, and we assume the Foxwoods houseway for this analysis. But I think that the houseway doesn't change that much from place to place, and in my opinion, that doesn't matter very much. There is a game in Washington State called Heads Up Hold'em, which is very similar to Ultimate Texas Hold'em and has exactly the same strategy, and I wrote a page about that, and you'll probably be seeing the game here in Las Vegas soon. There's a table game at the Paris called Two-Face Blackjack, which I analyzed and wrote about. I wrote two pages about alternate point spreads and totals, which may come in handy right now. For example, if you know the fair line on any given game is, say, -3, but you have the chance to get it at -2.5, it'll show you what the fair price is to buy or to give up to 7 points. And then there's some other things that I did that are wrote about, but those are the major accomplishments since the last time I was here.
You're a busy man.
And I mentioned earlier that tomorrow I'm going to release something. This is going to be one of my proudest accomplishments ever, is my Super Bowl prop calculator. And as I said, put in any point spread in total, and it will tell you the fair line for about 50 different props. And this can be used for any NFL game.
Are you going to keep it updated as you have more data?
I'm sure I will. I will probably add data only once a year, probably after the regular season. And I'm sure I will add more props to it every single year.
Very good. That was very interesting. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. Every Thursday, Senior Slot Tournament Day, where $5,200 is given away. All seniors get one free entry, and two more may be earned with a modest amount of play. Double Point Day, Monday, February 17th, President's Day. All games included, no limits. Slot players get more than that. In February, they have four gift giveaways. The way it works is you must play 500 video poker points on Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, and pick up your gift the following Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. The first gift for which you may begin earning points this coming Saturday is an Az knife. That's Adze. The next semester free video poker classes at the South Point will begin this coming Wednesday, February 5th at noon, and will continue for 10 weeks. Current schedule may be found on bobdancer.com. The first game in the semester is Jacks or Better. There'll be a beginner's class at noon, and at 2 o'clock will be an intermediate class in the same game. At the Palms, they've completely reformatted their weekly drawings again. In February, it'll be Friday only at 7 p.m. You may earn an unlimited number of tickets, 5 times drawing tickets Friday and Saturday from 8 to midnight, and 2 times drawing tickets on Sundays and Thursdays. Also, you are a guaranteed winner. If you swipe your card on Friday and don't win, you'll have $10 free play on your card Saturday between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. Play, earn, and win. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday awards. Tomorrow ends the January promotion where you earn free play on these days. Starting Monday, for the first half of February, you will earn Palms gift cards. For the latter half of February, you will earn Albertsons Market gift cards. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw, Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, many others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino, and you need practice to make sure you know how to play. The free monthly contest this month, Good Times Pay Poker, ends tomorrow. On Saturday, February 1st, they'll start their daily contest again. Saturday, Hyper Bonus Poker. And Super Bowl Sunday, it is Super Triple Play. For the first time I can remember, we have guests lined up for almost the next 2 months. We have a plethora of riches at the moment. Feels kind of good, actually. I'm going to mention the next two. Very recently was the Blackjack Ball. It was held here in Vegas. The host of the ball, Max Rubin, will be here, along with the winner of the Gross Gene Cup. Although there were some famous names at the final table, the last man standing goes by the name of Smoke. You will meet him next week. The following week, we'll be hosting Vinny DiCarlo. He's a surveillance guy. Munch, tell us about him.
Well, Vinny has been on the show before, back, I don't remember, a couple of years ago, maybe. He wrote a book called How to Beat Casino Surveillance. So he's coming back. One of the things I'm excited about is he is going to send me some surveillance photographs that I'm going to put up on the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page. So people, as soon as I get those, I'll put those up so people can go take a look at those, and hopefully that will spur some discussion prior to the show so we can get some, you know, if you want to submit your questions to Vinny, you can do that at the Facebook page for Gambling with an Edge, or email us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com.
Do you have any idea what these surveillance photos are going to entail?
I don't yet. It was sort of a tease. So, you know, we'll see what he sends and
go from there.
He's kind of a character, so you never know what he might send us.
Yeah, last week on the air, I think Anthony Curtis, we got 2 minutes. Anthony Curtis mentioned the book American Roulette, and Munchkin was going, yeah, that's a great book. So I went to the library, and so for the last week I've been reading American Roulette. It's about past posting, which means it has been the decision has been decided, and then somehow you get your bets onto the layout. I'm not at all interested in, it is out and out cheating. There's no two ways about it. I'm not interested in becoming a past poster. I find the book fascinating in learning how this past posting goes on and what kind of distractions they use to get the bets down. So I find it educational in the sense that I basically want to know everything that's happening around a casino, but,
I thought it was very well written, and I a very interesting book, I think, for many of our listeners if they haven't read it.
All right.
One of the things he said in there that really struck a chord with me was they ran into some guys in a casino that they had seen in a casino in another city, and it was the same guys. And he said, you know, if you run into the same guys in another casino in another city, they're working. Those are not tourists who just happen to be in the same two places you were. I thought that was really accurate. I liked that.
Yeah, and it turned out that in this particular case, they shared casinos. So like at the time they were in Tahoe and there were four casinos, it's like your groups take those two and we'll take these two. And so anyway, it was interesting. Thank you very much, Michael Shackelford. Thank you, Munchkin. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.